Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that chooses the movers and shakers. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
In this midweek shot, the first midweek shot of 2018, we're going to create new opportunities for ourselves to call wrong predictions and make fools of ourselves. It's called Fantasy Politics. So the idea is that we're going to pick those in the UK political scene who we think will be the most influential over the next year. It's loosely based on the draft that 538 do, but they have an NFL-style draft. We are British and therefore don't follow American football, so instead it's based on fantasy football. We had to decide who's going to go first in this. I voted for me to go first and Steve voted for him to go first. So we went for the tried and tested Virginia method of just picking a name out of a bowl. It was my name that came out of a bowl. So I'm going to start. There are eight different areas and we're going to pick one person who we think would be particularly influential over the next year. So just before we start, the eight areas are party leader, cabinet minister, shadow cabinet minister, backbench MP, non-English politician, a politician not from the two big parties, an elected mayor, and a commentator or an activist. Oh, and the final thing I should say is, whoever I pick, Steve cannot pick. So it's good to have the initiative or the momentum, one might say. So the party leader I'm going to choose is Theresa May. She's the Prime Minister. She probably will still be the Prime Minister by 2018. Her approval ratings aren't terrible. And I think they may well improve just because people have a little bit of respect for how she's just doggedly getting on with the job, even though really her government might not be very good. Obviously, I think she's still going to be a very influential in terms of what her government does.
See, I can totally see why you've gone for Theresa May there. I considered going for May, but I decided that actually, she's going to have an influence. I don't think... compared to other people, she'll be as dynamic. I think she's going to be very reactive. Her main focus is going to be on Brexit, which is going to be primarily just responding to what the EU wants to achieve rather than doing anything major. As a result of that, I don't think her overall influence in terms of her getting stuff done is going to be that great, which is actually why I've gone for the opposite and gone for the leader of the opposition, Jeremy Corbyn. Corbyn has obviously come off of a very strong 2017. Mm-hmm. Right off the bat in 2018, we've issues with the NHS, an area which the Labour Party and Jeremy Corbyn are very strong on. There's an awful lot of things which the Tories are going to have to deal with, which are going to play into the Labour leader's wheelhouse. And as such, I think there's quite a significant bit of potential for him to be able to force some U-turns, get some scalps, and actually make some literal impact in terms of shaping government policy.
That's interesting. I still think, and I think it may well become clear over the few selections, that I think that the people who are influential will be those who are within the Conservative Party, able to influence from within, whether that be rebel MPs, whether that be people from the DUP. Almost everyone in Labour is behind him with the agenda that he's got. Whether that will translate into influence in setting government policy, I'm not so sure. Come to us in 3 months to find out, listeners. Yeah. So next one then, Steve, which cabinet minister are you going to go for?
I have gone for what is likely to be a very unpopular choice and gone for Jeremy Hunt for a couple of reasons. One, as I said previously, right off the bat, the NHS has become a headline issue in 2018. It's set to continue being that for a good long while. Labour always run on the NHS in some capacity. When it comes up to elections, we have local elections obviously in May as well. So, and I would expect the NHS in various forms to feature in that, even though the councils themselves aren't responsible for them.
But they are responsible for social care, and the social care crisis is having a direct impact.
Exactly. So you've got that that alone. So the way that Hunt responds to those, his ability to get the government to either provide funding or actually move to resolve some of the issues that the NHS have, is going to be integral in multiple ways. But there's also the fact that Hunt is coming out of the shadows a little bit, and you're now starting to see discussions around him as a potential future leader of the Conservative Party. He's gone from being a Remainer to a fairly strident Brexiter. So I am expecting to see Jeremy Hunt kind of, as I say, step out of the shadows and be a bit more of a public face for the Conservatives on a number of other issues. Now, a lot of left-wingers may be sitting there cackling maniacally about the prospect of Jeremy Hunt being the face of the Conservative Party in any form, given how badly he's perceived to have done with the NHS. But I wouldn't underestimate him. I think actually out of all of the current crop of the current generation of Conservative politicians that are actually in power at the moment, he's probably one of the best. And he's not an idiot.
So Jeremy Hunt was my second pick, basically for the reasons you've outlined. Before left-wingers heap derision on you for your choice, my choice for cabinet minister is favourite of the left-wingers. Obviously, it's got to be Michael Gove.
See, he was my second pick.
The Govester, environment minister at the moment, getting plaudits from George Monbiot in what must be the weirdest political comeback of 2017 when he was returned to the cabinet after June's election. Gove will have a very public impact on the government's Brexit position as well. I get the impression, or one gets the impression from the reports on cabinet discussions on Brexit, that Gove is quite an influential figure, and I expect that his voice of those pushing for a harder Brexit, I think his voice will be very influential. Now, neither of us went for Boris Johnson, obviously, despite him calling for there to be stamps commemorating Brexit in what is the weirdest manifestation yet of the culture war going on at the moment. In the US, it's all about Christmas, and here it's about stamps. Can I mention a couple of wild cards? One of them is Gavin Williamson, the assassin-faced baby.
Understandable.
Also, Dominic Raab.
Yes.
If this was a share-buying game, I would buy shares in Dominic Raab now.
Because they're going to shoot up. Because he's likely to be one of the people that when that reshuffle does happen, and even if it doesn't happen in January, it'll have to happen at some point. He'll be one of the ones that gets promoted.
And he's probably also a dark horse for the leadership, as is Jeremy Hunt. And as is, let's face it, probably half the Conservative parliamentary party.
Yep.
Shadow cabinet minister.
Mm-hmm.
It's my turn to pick first this time. My choice is Angela Rayner.
That was my first choice.
An effective communicator. I get the impression that she's positioning herself as a future leader. I think she'd be a damn good leader. She, as opposed to my second choice, we'll go through in a minute, she has the profile, I think, to reach parts of the country that Labour cannot reach currently. Mm-hmm. You've got Conservatives calling her the most effective shadow education secretary in a generation, which is very high praise, and it's deservedly so. But she's also softening a lot of the rhetoric on free schools and academies that Labour has, not necessarily supporting them, but actually taking a lot of the line that Liz Kendall was making in the leadership election 2 years ago. We saw her accused of being a Blairite traitorous bastard by talking about the fact that, well, actually, these schools are going to be around if we're in government in 5 years' time. We can't just close all of them. We've got to think about how we deal with them pragmatically.
Would someone please think of the children?
So who's your pick then for Shadow Cabinet Minister?
Well, given my number one pick in Angela Rayner has been drafted already, I'm going to go with Emily Thornberry.
My second choice pick.
Yeah, I thought that might be the case. So Thornberry has been one of the few standout performers, I think, actually, in the Labour Shadow Cabinet in a number of ways. Whilst Rayner, I think, has been actually the best in terms of overall impact and performance. Thornberry has done very, very well in actually what is quite a tricky political situation. You know, you may not be able to point to kind of policy wins or anything like that for her, but she has been able to position herself very, very effectively in the Labour Party as a part of the Shadow Cabinet, as an ally of Jeremy Corbyn's, positioning herself as a part of that left-wing element now. She's favoured by Momentum. She is well liked by the grassroots for the most part. And she has not done a bad job when she's been filling in for Jeremy Corbyn at PMQs. Now, granted, she was going up against Damian Green when Damian Green was not at the top of his game. But there was still a good baseline there. And again, she also looks like she's going on to manoeuvres as a potential leader. Can I just say how nice it is for us to be able to say that both of the drafts we've gone for here are both female MPs, and we're both able to say potential leaders, and neither of them would be awful.
It is a pleasure to see Emily Thornberry do PMQs in a very kind of very William Hague way, which probably isn't the comparison you want if you're thinking about being a future leader, but she has got that...
There's a charisma there.
There's that charisma and quick wit, which isn't part of Jeremy's repertoire, shall we say. Also, in an area where... I mean, foreign policy has always been something that Jeremy's been... quite passionate about. Yep. Unlike Hillary Benn, I think Emily Thornberry's been able to work with the grain of Corbyn's views, but has then come out, say, and been quite defending Israel, for instance. Yes. So being able to differentiate out from that Corbyn line, which I think is very, very important as well. Yep.
And as I say, she's managed to do that without attracting the ire of the online Corbynist mob.
Mm.
So she's managed to handle herself very, very well, and I think she's going to be very influential in terms of the internal leanings of the Labour Party moving forward.
If I can make a quick shout out for Sir Keir Starmer, he's not just going to be influential in 2018. I think his Brexit position, as we've said on the podcast, you might not agree with it, but it's probably the best place that Labour can be in politically right now. He will still, I think, be very, very influential. I just almost think that his influence has already happened. I don't think Labour's Brexit position is going to change very much over the next 6 to 12 months. No. So I think probably Thornberry rather than Starmer in terms of who's going to be influential.
Makes sense.
At the moment. Okay, so Steve, who's going to be the most influential backbencher?
So I've gone for Nicky Morgan, former member of George Osborne, David Cameron cabinet, now chair of the Treasury Select Committee, a very powerful and influential select committee within the House of Commons, beat off Jacob Rees-Mogg to get there, demonstrating that she's able to make friends across the House, and has demonstrated in 2017 that she's not afraid to get her hands dirty and vote against the government.
Mm-hmm.
She holds a powerful position as the chair of the Select Committee. She's become a rebel where it matters in a number of areas. She is a part of the core group along with Dominic Grieve and Ken Clark and those sorts of MPs who are going to make life difficult for the government if they're not careful. And I think Nicky Morgan is likely to be the face of that in an awful lot of ways. I almost tried to hedge my bets and go for the entirety of the Tory rebels, but I thought you might call me out on that as a draft pick.
I think one person.
Yeah.
The point of a football team is you have 11 people on it. You can't kind of pick 8 of them. Actually, I'm going to be slightly controversial and pick my second choice because it kind of matches yours, sort of. So Sarah Wollaston is going to be my choice.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, I thought maybe Dominic Grieve, because he seems to be the ringleader of this group. But because Sarah Wollaston is the chair of the Health Select Committee, as you've mentioned, health is going to be a massive issue in the early months. And I think someone who worked as a GP and is chair of the Health Select Committee will be very influential in that area. But she is part of, do we call them traitorous, saboteurs, enemies of the people, mutineers?
I think. Going to call them sensible Tories, but...
Well, I suppose it depends which paper you read. She's still part of that group, which is why I thought I'd choose her rather than Dominic Grieve, because Dominic Grieve only has one string to his admittedly very impressive bow. None of us went for Jacob Rees-Mogg.
He was my second. If there's going to be anybody who's going to be first out of the gates... that if things don't go the right way from the hardline Brexiter perspective with the Brexit negotiations, it's going to be him. We treat him as though he's this funny little fellow, but he's clearly an intelligent bloke, and he's clearly quite well-known and well-liked, not just within Parliament for on his own side, but also with the Tory grassroots as well. You have that concept of Mogmentum, which came up over the summer, and the kind of the push seemingly to try and build up, you know, Mog as a potential Prime Minister.
I think an actual shiver just went around my side. I swear I heard bats hooting somewhere outside the bunker.
But because the government is likely to go along with what he wants for the most part, I was leaning more towards somebody who would be more visible in terms of their influence.
Just very quickly, want to put out a shout out to Stella Creasy and Chuka Amana on the Labour side as well. But again, the thesis I'm going with is that those people who are influential are going to be those on the government side, holding the government to account. Right, it's my turn now, isn't it?
Yep.
For non-English politician.
Yep.
Ruth Davidson. She's a rising star. I think she will be a Tory leader. And if she does, then Labour are in pretty serious trouble. But also, there is a group of Scottish MPs, Scottish Tory Party, and they will take their line from Ruth Davidson. And without those Tory MPs, it's fair to say, actually, Theresa May wouldn't be in number 10, and you could well see Jeremy Corbyn head of a minority government. So those MPs are very important. Ruth Davidson was big, prominent campaigner for Remain, spoke in the big televised TV debates at Wembley. I can see her using those Tory MPs, and with her public stances as well, to soften the Tory, or at least try and soften the Tory Brexit stance.
Yeah, makes sense. I can totally agree with all of that. So, for my pick, well, it's kind of an obvious one from my perspective, Arlene Foster, head of the DUP, the party which is propping up the government at the moment. They've already, in 2017, demonstrated that they can and will kind of just throw the ball into the air and cause chaos, that they have been quite happy to kind of get their hands dirty and have their say on issues. So I think if things start going a little bit tits up on Brexit, they are likely to be the ones that push the government in a more hardline direction than anything else. And of course, we've got the situation of the Northern Ireland border still needing to be resolved, and their say on that is going to be massively important, not just in terms of this year, but also for the future of the United Kingdom, given that we have Leo Varadkar making statements recently about how he wants to see a unified Ireland again.
Yes, I think the DUP tail will wag the Tory dog, or at least I think that will certainly be the perception put out by Labour leaflets. As you said, there's a local election campaign going on. I'm sure a line you will hear millions of times on doorsteps around the country is, why did Theresa May manage to find £1 billion to give to the DUP to prop up her government
when she can't find it for the NHS?
Or social care,
or education, or whatever polls well in that particular district.
Insert issue here. Also, on the DUP, apparently now the DUP are having weekly meetings. I think this is a new thing that's happened, according to the Politico Playbook email, that the DUP are now having weekly meetings with the Conservatives to have issues, to brief on issues. I think that may be because the link between the DUP and the government was Damien Green. You can read it two ways. Either they'll have more input into policy, or it means you won't have a fiasco like Theresa May promising stuff to the EU Commission without having told the DUP about it beforehand. This time you go first, Steve. Politician from outside the two big parties.
I have gone for a bit of a wild card here, in that I've gone for somebody who I think is going to make an impact and a splash within their own party, and that party being the Liberal Democrats. So one of the newly elected Liberal Democrat MPs for Oxford West and Abingdon is a lady by the name of Leila Moran. She's a very effective speaker, a very effective campaigner, and in various corners of the Liberal Democrats currently, she's already being talked up as a potential leader at some point. It's the sort of thing where, at the moment, if you were going to make a bet, the next kind of leadership election for the Lib Dems would go between Jo Swinson and Leila Moran, if they both actually wanted it. To be honest, I don't necessarily think Leila Moran is going to be a saviour for the Lib Dems. I think she's very effective, but she is very new. But I think that she's going to make enough of a splash within her own party that you will start to see more and more of her. She'll be given more and more publicity. She will be put in front of the cameras a hell of a lot more. You'll see her on Question Time a lot more frequently than some of the other Lib Dem MPs. You know, all in all, she will make more of an impact than the rest of them.
No, I agree. And Leila Moran was on my shortlist for similar reasons, but I didn't pick her mainly because I assumed that you would. my first pick was going to be Arlene Foster, but we can't really have the same person twice, even though it's different categories.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for Nicola Sturgeon. As we will talk about on Sunday, That episode's on Brexit in 2018. Some parts of the Brexit legislation passed in Westminster will have to be passed by the Scottish and Welsh legislatures, or at least will have to be approved by them. It's a bit counterintuitive because I've been arguing that the DUP will have a bit more influence over the Tory party than Exit influences, but I think this and my next pick, I think, will show that there are a broad coalition of voices trying to soften the government's Brexit stance. And I think those voices, as well as the voices within their own party, mean we will see some sort of softening of the Brexit stance / return to reality, depending on your point of view on Brexit.
Great.
Without further ado then, my elected mayor, who I think will be most influential this year, is Sadiq Khan. Picked for a pretty similar reason for Nicola Sturgeon. Obviously, he's a big player on the national political scene as well. I think as the first Muslim elected mayor of a major European city, caused quite a splash worldwide, actually. Donald Trump tweeted attacks at him, but not Andy Burnham. Maybe because Donald Trump likes people from the north, who knows. But I think that, again, London and the city of London is going to be very affected by Brexit, and I think Sadiq Khan will be quite an effective voice softening the Brexit stance. I also think that hope that with the inquiry that's going to be happening into the Grenfell Tower disaster, that maybe Sadiq Khan can try and push for changes in housing in that area as well.
Okay. Yeah, I can totally see your logic there. But I've gone almost the complete opposite way, in that I've gone for a Conservative elected mayor, because the Tory mayor is going to have more influence within the Conservative Party to actually make things change, which is why I've gone for Andy Street, the West Midlands Metro mayor.
Who's my second choice?
We are 6 days in to 2018 at the time of recording of this podcast. Already, I've seen Andy Street on the TV, on radio, talking about a report on air quality in the West Midlands, calling for a congestion charge for diesel engines, making a public call for the government to bring in a national scrappage scheme for diesel engines as well. And so he's getting off to a good start. I had a bit of a quiet first 6 months or so, but I think he's found his feet. He's done a lot of the preparatory work, and now he's going to move things forward from here on out. As I say, I think the fact that he's a Conservative and well-liked and has influence within the Conservative Party means he's going to be listened to more than, say, someone like Sadiq Khan, even if everything Sadiq Khan is saying is 100% right.
He has, I think he's travelled to Scandinavia to see how they deal with homelessness there.
Yep.
Right, final one. Again, this is more like a wild card pick, I suppose, but which commentator or activist do you think will have a big impact in the first few months of 2018?
I've gone for Owen Jones, darling of the left-wing commentariat, for a couple of reasons. One, he is influential. He's well-read, he's well-known, he has multiple forms of reaching left-wing audiences. He does a podcast now, he's got, obviously...
It's not as good as ours, I'm afraid.
No, clearly not. He's got his articles, obviously, in the various newspapers that he writes for, and he's just a well-known figure on the left. But the main reason, actually, I've gone for him is that Jones has demonstrated, last year, actually, that he's very effective at getting people organised. He's been running some, post the general election, he's been running campaign days and helping organise and getting people to certain seats which are now vulnerable to the Labour Party, including seats like Ian Duncan Smith's, Amber Rudd's, Justin Greening's, I believe, is also on that list as well. Basically, running almost a little bit of a decapitation strategy for Momentum activists and wider Labour activists to get out there, keep them engaged, keep them going, to move them forward in an effective way. And it seems to have worked.
Mm.
There's, on a number of the days that have happened, they've done some comparisons between the number of activists that were out and about for Labour versus the ones that are out and about for the Tories. And guess what? There were hundreds there for Labour and maybe a dozen or two for the Tories. And this is the sort of thing which makes the difference, actually, in winning seats. And if we can continue that kind of activity and Owen can continue pushing for that sort of stuff, then he is going to make a massive impact in 2018 in terms of potentially helping deliver some councils to the Labour Party and moving forward into the Parliament as well.
We talked on Sunday's show the importance for Labour of getting Momentum Act to active to campaign in the local elections, and I think it's key. I think Owen Jones is a really important part of that. I also think, again, to bring everything back to Brexit, I think the fact that Owen is one of those people who is Remainer but respects the result and doesn't necessarily see much point in pushing for a softer Brexit.
Yeah.
I think that view is quite widespread among a lot of activists, and how his view changes on Brexit, if it changes, I think will make the difference, because he is one of those few columnists who I think is also an opinion former. I mean, partly because of his reach, also because he's a damn good writer,
yeah.
As much as I might disagree with a lot of what he says. I've got a nice, boring, sensible option and a complete wild card. So would you rather I went for the wild card or the sensible, boring option?
We can discuss the wild card afterwards, because my second pick was a bit of a wild card as well. So
right, my sensible, boring pick then is Nick Timothy. He is now a columnist for The Sun and The Telegraph, and I imagine what he says will be influential. I also think that Theresa May is still talking to Nick Timothy and probably still gets advice from him. I think the difference between my pick and your pick maybe is, I think Owens will be very visible. I don't necessarily think that Nick Timothy's is. Maybe a test to see how right I am will be the reshuffle, because Nick Timothy wrote an article in The Sun a couple of weeks ago criticising Justine Greening and saying that she wasn't really doing enough to combat the problems of social mobility. I mean, it's a bit rich from someone who says that we should have more grammar schools, but it'll be interesting to see if Justine Greening stays. And if she does, that probably means I've been a bit wrong. So my wildcard pick was Carol Cadwallader from The Guardian.
Okay.
So she's the correspondent that is looking into the links between Arron Banks, the Lagartum Institute, and the Russians in terms of the funding for the Brexit referendum campaign.
Makes sense.
I think that will be a big issue. She's one of the ones who is being... Well, the official Leave campaign tweeted out a gif of her basically being punched repeatedly in the face, which was...
charming.
I do believe that that Russia story will run, and therefore her reporting will be very influential. Not just her reporting, but that of Open Democracy as well, who've done some quite good stuff on it. That's my wild card. Who was yours?
My wild card was George Osborne.
Oh, yes, of course. How could we forget the Osborne?
I didn't forget the Osborne.
Okay.
Osborne, simply because he is the editor of the Evening Standard. His views and his stance on things is going to massively influence the direction and the line that the paper takes. And he doesn't like Theresa May.
I hadn't noticed that.
I know,
that.
It comes as a surprise to most people.
He's kept it so quiet.
I know. But yeah, he's going to be massively influential in terms of his position and role, and just by virtue and of who he is and his former role in government. Mm. I was umming and ahhing over whether to go for Osborne or Owen Jones as my actual proper pick. In the end, I went for Jones because I thought his would overall probably make more of a noticeable, visible impact, whilst I think Osborne is just going to succeed in annoying an awful lot of Tories, isn't a bad thing. But
I think Osborne's very much a Westminster bubble pick, whereas Owen Jones is definitely going out there and trying to influence
the wider part of Britain,
and continue the momentum with a small and big M into the local elections. They are our picks. Let us know if you agree with them on Twitter. We have a Twitter handle, excitingly, which is @NoChampagnePod. Or if you want to abuse us directly, I'm @PaperbackRioter.
And I'm @CentreRadical.
We also have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/NotEnoughChampagne. And our website is NotEnoughChampagne.com. Dave Depper designed our theme tune, Fucky Good Times, and James Cram designed our logo. Happy plotting, everyone. In this midweek shot, first midweek shot of 2017?
2018.